Everyone needs a safe place to talk. You're here today with Grant and Laurel Fishbook, and we are passionate about the messiness of authentic conversation. From hard questions to difficult responses, this is a risk worth taking. There will be a whole lot of laughs, maybe some tears, and everything in between. Join us as we continue the conversation to gain understanding about ourselves, others, and the Jesus we love.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We're so glad that you're here today. And I am so honored to have not only Laurel here in the room today to kind of guide our conversation, but two good friends and brothers. So I'd like to welcome Pastor Bob Marvel. Bob has been the pastor at Cornwall Church for longer than a dinosaur normally exists for. How long have you actually been there?
I've been there since 1987, but as a senior pastor since 93. So it's been a few decades.
A few decades, yeah, exactly. So, and Bob and I, we love hanging out together. Bob talked me into running my first marathon, so we've got a lot of track record. And so glad to have Bob. And then also Paul Peterson is with us. Paul has been not only a pastor at Hillcrest here in our local community, but also at Bellingham Covenant for years and years. I would characterize Paul as kind of the wise old sage of pastoral ministry in Whatcom County. What I do know is this, our county would not be the same if Paul had not done the ministry that he has done. And so we're so glad to have both of you here. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're looking forward to just having a great conversation together.
Paul, he called you old. Do you want to speak to that?
No, that's fair. That's fair. I can't get away with any other thought just by virtue of what I look like. Oh, I'm glad this is a podcast.
Oh, man. We've had so much fun banter just in the few minutes before we even got started. So this will be a really fun podcast. In this conversation, we want to look past the building and the people. We want to look past the worship and the preaching and look beyond the title, because we want to take a closer look at the person that we call pastor. So the first question I have for all of you is, why full-time ministry? I mean, I don't think people are really running to that right now.
Where do I sign up?
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, you hear people have a calling. If that's your answer, please explain, because I think that seems really obscure. How early did you know? Did you, like, when you were five, when everybody else wanted to be a policeman and a fireman, did you want to be a preacher?
Well, for me, it was actually a career change at age 31. And it really, my verse from the scripture for my calling is Luke 12:48. And that is, to whom much has been given, much will be required. And I was fortunate to grow up in a very healthy home that honored Christ. It was very unusual. I learned later in college that my experience was very unique. But I also had wonderful mentors and pastors in my life. And as I began my career in business, I was literally walking in the warehouse one day doing inventory. And that scripture came to my mind. And I didn't even know where it was in the Bible. But I knew it was a good principle that God holds us all accountable for what we've been given. And for me, I had been given a lot, and I had to wrestle with that. Not that the pastoral calling is the highest, but for me, that was my way of giving back in ways that I had received. And so I give credit to my wife for following that call, because it wasn't anything that we had agreed upon when we were dating. But that was my story.
I think, and this it probably goes without saying, all of us are in full-time ministry. It's whether it's vocational or not. My father was a pastor, and I grew up with that as a kid. You know, dad was hero, and I thought early on, I want to be a pastor. But I think that, I don't know that that would be so much that God was calling, that I was hearing God's call, but more that I thought my dad was my hero. Mm-hmm. Throughout life, he always said to my brother and my sister and I, don't ever go into the ministry because people pressure you in, or because you think that I will love you more or be more proud of you. Because we'd have people that, as kids, that would say, are you going to grow up and be a preacher like your daddy? And he didn't want us to go into it for that reason at all, or to feel pressure. So I kind of pendulum swung, and when people say, are you going to go into the ministry? I'd say, absolutely not. And in my mind, it's like, because dad told me not to. Well, he didn't tell me not to. He just said, don't do it for the wrong reason. And as I got into high school and college, there were some other pastors that were very instrumental in my own spiritual life, youth pastors and different guys that really impacted me. And into college, I was starting to think, I wonder if ministry would be something that I might pursue. And I went to a small Christian liberal arts college. And so I went in not declaring a major, but I was feeling this pull towards specifically student ministry, youth ministry. Anyway, at the beginning of my junior year, I had to declare a major, and I went into my advisor, who actually knew my family as well. And I said, "Dr. Dawson, I'm ready to declare my major. I'm going to major in religion. I'm going into full-time ministry." He said, "Well, I could have told you that years ago." And I said, "Well, I didn't need to hear it from a professor. I needed to hear it from God," and pursued that.
For me, my dad was not a pastor. He was a dairy equipment salesman. He was a business guy. And I guess I always had designs. Someday I would buy New West products. And dad kind of pulled the rug out from underneath me at some point by simply saying, "Yeah, that's never going to happen. Just so you know, that's not the direction." So I started looking, but it wasn't until my third year at college, I got to work at a camp during the summertime called Cedarwood. It was a Youth for Christ camp. And met a kid named Eldon, who was actually being kicked out of camp because he pulled a knife on another kid in my cabin. And I was standing in the driveway of Camp Cedarwood. Eldon's dad had been called. He showed up drunk in this beat up old van. I remember standing there watching this kid. I mean, he looked at me with a look that could only convey, like, "Help. Just help me." And as they drove away, I mean, I probably should have done something about it. I didn't know. I was lost. But as they were driving away, it's like Jesus came and stood in the driveway with me and just said, "You need to do something about that." So youth ministry became the door that we walked through. And here we are.
Here we are. I had vowed I was never marrying a pastor or a doctor. And so here I am 30 plus years later. Obviously, God had a different plan. I thought both were never home. And I didn't want that for my family. But I guess going in, we kind of figured out how to balance that, right?
Exactly.
But it was an interesting juggle. Well, whatever brought you guys to this point, thank you for doing it, because it's made a difference, that's for sure. So we're going to just kind of dive into some of the tougher issues. When you are leading a church, people come and people go. What kind of a toll does that take on your heart?
Well, that certainly has been this season we've been in, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so much division, people moving back and forth, in and out. And it does take a toll. And I think anybody that says it's not that big of a deal, I don't think they're being honest. I think it does. When shepherds lose sheep, there's a pain, there's a wound, there's a hurt. I think how you deal with that is really a question of how you deal with God as your own shepherd. But I can tell you from my experience, it's probably been one of the greatest pain points of ministry, is watching people be there, love them, minister to them, be there in the darkest moments, and then find out you're completely disposable as soon as you disagree with some opinion they may have on politics or medicine or pandemics or once in a thousand year heat waves.
I'd like to say just my admiration for both Bob and Grant, because as they've pastored the two largest churches in this county for many, many years, I've watched them with what I call the shepherd's heart as a pastor. And it's as your church grows into the thousands, I never conceived of churches of the size that we see today. And yet these two guys in particular have demonstrated their concern for individuals. So I call that, it's a vocational hazard, because either you become, "I'm just a pass-through, no different than a theme park," or "I'm director of a theme park," or "I'm going to continue to be vulnerable and shepherd people the way that," going back to your first question, "the call really demands." I didn't want to become the worst caricature of what I had seen was negative about pastors. And so for me, as I've experienced the pain of people rejecting the church, rejecting Christ, rejecting me, I've tried to just say, this is part of the calling. I can't cure it. I can't make it feel better. And so it's also driven me to support my colleagues in ministry, because any true shepherd knows that pain. We don't have to talk about the individuals or why it happened. When we hear it, we just want to look at each other and say, "Continue on, brother. You know, we're around you. We understand it." And Jesus himself experienced that.
You know, I think there are some people leaving that affect me more than others. And Grant, I think you alluded to this, people you poured your life into, invested in, bent over backwards to help. Not that they owe you anything, but there's a connection that maybe I assumed was deeper. But I know that there are times when I take it personally, and there are other times when it's like, well, you know, we know that Cornwall is not for everybody. And so some of those are easier than others. Again, my dad, spending his whole life in the ministry, always said, Bob, you have to have the hide of a rhino and keep the heart of a dove. And that's not always easy. It's to be able to take those shots and to absorb that and still keep the heart tender. One of the things I pray for is that as people leave, that there won't be a weirdness, that when I do run into them at the store, at the mall, or wherever, that I would just be as happy to say hi and bless them and see how they're doing. I mean, just to not have that be a weirdness. And you guys have experienced it too, where someone will see you and you see that they see you, but then they act like they don't see you because they left under whatever circumstances or never had any kind of parting comments. And I like to just say, hey, and wave at them and to try to take that awkwardness away.
That's a great point, because I never expected to be in the Whatcom County area for 37 years, but here I am. But I, early on in my years at Hillcrest, decided I would do exactly what Bob said. If I had what I call the exit interview and they were willing to meet, they would usually just say, yeah, it is your problem and I'm leaving because of you or whatever. And you just kind of take those shots. Mm-hmm. But then my final thing wouldn't be to defend myself. It would just simply be to say that when I see you in this community, if we're at the mall, I'm not going to duck in a shop and act like I didn't see you. I'm going to walk up to you, extend my hand, say, how's it going, Grant? How's it going? And that served me well. And likewise, Bob.
I think it was amazing that your dad said that, because my first senior pastor, I asked Jim Scobie once, what does it take to last in ministry? And he said, soft heart, thick skin. Mm-hmm. It was those two things. But I also think it's kind of fun. We joke around together as pastors a little bit when it comes to the shuffle, because there are people that shuffle back and forth. And it reminds me of, I think it was the Wesley brothers. One of them was writing to the other one who was in the middle of a revival and said, you know, we've experienced some great additions and some blessed subtractions as well. So sometimes there's probably a little bit of a feeling of, hey, this family's leaving. They're not happy. They're coming your direction. And God bless you, brother. I will pray for you. And I hope it goes better for you than it did for me. Yeah. So we try to hold those things a little bit loose.
Well, and I'll just throw this in and we can edit this out if we need to. But Grant and Laurel, when you and both of you were having dinner with Doreen and I think we were at that steakhouse out in Linden, and there was a couple that was there as well that had been at Cornwall, had left Cornwall to go to Christ the King, and she had come up and talked with us. And after she left, I said something, Grant, to you about, I'm glad that she found a place at Christ King. And you said, well, she's moved on from us, so I don't know where she's going to church. So
it's true.
It just keeps going.
Yeah.
I know you can laugh about it and joke about it, but gosh, I see the pain that it causes my own husband, because like you said, you invest so much in these people, and ministry is relational. That's what makes it successful, right? A good pastor cares and loves deeply. And so you're going to hurt deeply in situations where they decide to walk away, especially when you don't understand the reason. Sometimes you're right. Different churches fit different people, and that's valid. You know, you want to find a place that's comfortable for you. But so when you face those times of discouragement, how do you deal with it? And even probably more interestingly, how does your spouse deal with it? Grant, you don't have to answer.
I've always encouraged pastors to have a caring circle, if you will, outside of their own church. Just because you're so integrated into the system of your own congregation, especially being the lead, that every decision you make influences the chain, if you will, the staff, the congregation, the board. And so, for example, whenever I've been considering a change or looking for wisdom, I've gone outside to those that I've found are trustworthy in outside of my own church circle. And again, I hope that doesn't sound like I don't trust people in my own church. That's not the issue. It's like people outside your congregation don't have a vested interest. And I always say they care more about who you are in Christ than what you do for Christ. So I'm always looking for those kind of people. And those are the go-tos, especially when it's pretty raw. my wife's situation, I think confidentiality is a big part of it. I really have tried hard over the years not to share specifics. She'll know when somebody's gone. And the joke I've always said is, now that I'm not connected to a particular parish, is we're just going to go away on some deserted island somewhere. Remember that situation back in 84? Well, let me tell you about that. You know, now it can all be told. No, I wouldn't do that. But I tried to protect my wife.
And I think, Paul, I think that's a part of it, too, is the protection. There are things that I don't tell Doreen, not because I don't trust her. I don't want to burden her with it. And maybe, and I don't want that to filter how she would see people as well. So now, like you said, there are some things that she is aware of, and there are times that I think it affects her more than it affects me. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes she hurts for me more than I hurt for myself. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the grace, or maybe it's just her love and sensitivity. But I think as well, Paul, to have people that you can go to, and Grant, we get together every month, and part of that is the therapy that I need. Mm-hmm. I'm not Grant's pastor. We're brothers in Christ, but we're friends, first and foremost, I think. And to be able to share that, and I trust him without any doubt at all, I trust him. And having other ministry friends who get it, some not in the area. And then I've got some friends who are not only not in ministry, not at Cornwall, a couple of friends in particular that aren't even followers of Christ. Now, I don't go into specifics because I don't want them to have a negative view of the church, but they are, sometimes the friendship there is so refreshing because I'm not their pastor, and they don't ask me to be on. I'm just their friend, and sometimes that's very helpful for me as well.
I think it's important for us to keep, like, I've sat with both of you guys at different times and said, can we take off the collar, the proverbial cleric collar, and just have the conversation on the hard stuff. And Paul, I will never forget, actually, there was a season, kind of 2011, 2010, when I was going through just a difficult time. And we do this thing called Pastors Praying for Pastors. And you ended up in my small group that day. And we ended up sitting knee to knee because one of the guys had to take a call. And I remember the prayer that you prayed. You said, Lord, don't let Grant grow weary in doing good. And that was encouragement. That was help. That was understanding. It wasn't anything more than that. It's just, I'm here. I get it. I understand. Don't give up. Amen. Keep walking. So it's important to hear it from our friends.
I want to come back to pastors praying for pastors too, because that's just a really exciting thing in Whatcom County, and I think very, very rare. How you and I have learned to balance it, I think you will tell me situations and stories, but no names. I asked for no names a long time ago, just because the same that you said, you don't want those awkward moments, and it's just, there's no need to know the names. I can pray for a situation without having a name attached. So we've kind of balanced it out. So, okay, guys, we know that you put in an hour or two on the weekends. Do you have any other responsibilities?
No, that's why I went into full-time ministry, because you only work a couple hours a week, and it's...
It's for the pay and the hours. Absolutely. We all know that.
Yeah, security guard at the mall was my other option. Yeah,
this is a serious question, because I know that... I mean, Grant got asked the other day, what website do you go to for your messages? Like, not to hear the ones he's preached, but to get the ones he's going to preach.
So. Yeah, apparently they think that's what we do, right? Just a quick Google search, print it out, and grab somebody else's stuff, and off we go. Yeah, my favorite line is this, though. You know, Grant, I want to do what you do, because, like, you go out for coffee with people, and it just seems so... It seems so encouraging. Okay, sure. Let's go with that job description.
Yeah, well, I admit that was my perspective, even as a kid that grew up in church, that I felt like I had more juice in a vocational job than what pastors did. And I had a very low view of the ministry until I met a guy that both Bob and Grant know named Bob Stone, the most influential pastor in my life. And this guy was just a crazy man in terms of the options that he felt could be a part of someone in ministry. And I was an intern with him. There were literally dozens of us that Bob pulled in. I call it sucked into the vortex of his craziness. And yet we were all enlightened to this thing called ministry can be whatever you want to invest into it. And that just changed and flipped it for me and was a huge part of later in my life kind of accepting that call.
So what are things you actually do? Because I think it is vague to people. They really see it as there's a few coffee dates and you maybe print off a message off the internet, you preach it on the weekend, and that's it. And I know from being married to a pastor, this is a 24/7 job, you know, or way of life, maybe more accurately. But what does that consist of? Because for us, it's so natural to know day in and day out, this is what it looks like. But for you guys, what do you do?
Yeah, got an answer.
Well, I don't know that I have a better answer. You know, there's a lot of things. Obviously, there is preaching and the prep that goes into that. And sometimes people don't know how much time and labor, I'll use that word, effort goes into preparing and then delivering, mm-hmm. Being available for counseling. Depending on the size of the church, there's staff issues, maybe elder issues. There might be some counseling, weddings, funerals, those kind of things. And coffee, yes, coffee with people, meeting with people. One of the things that, you know, Laurel, you talked about, you know, this, you're always on. I think there's a part for me of my mind, I am always thinking about whether it be sermons or situations or things that we're facing. At the same time, and I apologize for going back to my father, he was old school, kind of that better to burn out than rust out. The devil never takes a day off. Why should I?
Yeah.
And he did burn out. He went through an emotional collapse, actually was hospitalized and had to relearn some stuff. I've had to unlearn some stuff because he was a workaholic and, you know, the whole thing, God took a day off, you know? And so, maybe the devil doesn't, but God does. So maybe who do we want to be our example, the devil or the father here?
Yeah.
And so it's having boundaries as well. And sometimes I'm kind of going on a rabbit trail. Sometimes that's hard with people that may not understand the need for boundaries or families priorities of, well, why aren't you here when I need you? Well, maybe, you know, my kid has a game or whatever. I mean, my kids are out of the house now, so that's not the case. But it's to have those boundaries as well. But there's, sorry, Laurel, I've gone way off away from
no,
the original
you haven't.
Question.
This is exactly what I want to hear. The list goes on and on, right? It is never ending. And I think it's important for people to understand that. So there is a level of understanding when you aren't available that you aren't just sitting there waiting for a phone call or waiting for an email. Like it is... The biggest struggle is truly setting up those boundaries. And the hardest part, I believe, for most pastors is you want to be there for everybody. That is your desire and you want to help everyone. It is truly physically impossible and it is not healthy for that to even be your goal, right? That you have to have those boundaries. But I think it's important for people to have an understanding as to why you can't always be there.
Yeah, I think that, so when you think about it, there is the business aspect of what we do, which is we have 50 plus employees here. And so there's an HR department and people are hiring and they're moving on and going on to the next thing. So we've got to backfill staff issues. There's constant communication. For me, my email box, there are days when I open it up and it's just like, you know, when it starts generating and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, it's tiling on top of tiles. It's just like, you know, just stop. Just because every one of those is not, people don't contact me as a pastor because their life is going phenomenal. Like I'm still waiting for that day when somebody walks in. I just want to tell you how big of a part you played in it, as well as how, I mean, it's just like, it doesn't go that way. And so you can go through a normal day where you're doing sermon prep. You plan doing sermon prep from 9 to 11, and then someone calls because their child died. And so you walk into a death scene and you're there for 2 or 3 hours, and then you have to transition out of that. And there's a meeting with 2 staff people that you get back to in the afternoon. And then there's an evening meeting that follows up because you've got volunteers who can't come during the day because they have their own jobs. And so your leadership tends to be outside of normal hours. So it really is. It's a 24/7 constant perpetual movement in and out of the best and worst moments of people's lives. I mean, I wish it was just preaching and doing weddings, because I think you could I think there are people who would sign up for that. But then when you add death, crisis, sickness, palliative care, community crisis, just issue upon issue upon issue, suicides. I mean, there's just so many different things that we get called into. That's where the weight comes, because then you still have to show up Sunday morning and bring something of substance, because that's when the greatest part of the family's together, even though you've been looking after families in crisis all week long.
So taking all of that into consideration, is your own personal spiritual growth difficult as a pastor?
I don't know that I would use the word difficult as much as I would use the necessity for intentionality, because it's easy to just kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, of course I'm going to be in the Bible today. I'm working on this sermon, and yeah, I prayed with that couple after we met, and so yeah, I've spent time in the Word and I've prayed, but it wasn't that soul care of I'm connecting with my Lord, not because I have got a sermon to preach, not because I'm a pastor. So to me, it's the intentionality that's necessary.
Yeah, the thing that changed for me was reading a book called Ordering Your Private World in the mid-80s, and I was just making that move from a business career into vocational ministry, and the author used the description of a sinkhole, that a roadway, when it's collapsed, we've seen the photos that all of a sudden people are shocked and cars fall into these holes. But what was happening was the dirt underneath that roadway was being eroded slowly over years, maybe a broken water main or a small stream or something. But he likened it to pastors who generally have God-given gifts, both spiritual and natural, and those carry you in your 20s and 30s. But his point was, if you don't shore up your inner life, by the time you're 40, you're going to start to see those sinkholes happening, and we see that vocationally. And that was just a huge wake-up call for me at age 31, that I had neglected those types of things. I had been the busy, active person in the different things I had done, and so it really caused me to go to, for example, taking half days and then eventually full days of solitude and prayer, just to get away from it all and be able to do something that I couldn't do in the traditional 5 minutes with God that I was taught as a teenager.
Right.
That just doesn't sustain you. And so pastors need to figure out their own rhythms. We're all wired differently, but they just need to find a different rhythm.
And that time of solitude isn't just important for pastors. It's important for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, you know, it isn't even taught or talked about. And it's really, really important that we all learn to take that time just alone with Jesus, for sure, to grow.
Yeah, I would say one of the great, I would call, learning moments, even of the last couple of years, has been getting away from, in my own personal world, getting away from the working for Jesus and walking with Jesus, which is two completely different things. Because I think we convince ourselves we can live off of the table scraps, and God is setting a banquet in front of us saying, I want you to sit down and eat a meal with me. Let's have a conversation. Let's talk. Let's get beyond the pretense. Because I fell into the trap too. It was just like the sermon prep. Well, that was enough. I spent all day thinking about God's stuff. It's got to be enough. And then your soul is dry and empty. There's no conversation. So you have a working relationship with Jesus, but you don't have that deep abiding connection. It's like, I have a friendship with the God who I work for, but he's more interested in going for a walk with me than he is my job performance right now. So for me, it's been transformative in changing that, kind of deepening the well and making it more personal.
Yeah.
We even noticed that just at home we would always share prayer requests. We still do, but when our kids were home, we'd share a prayer request in the evening, and grants were usually about church.
Yep.
And, you know, it was like you had to really work hard to, okay, this is a personal thing. Because I think it invaded your thoughts, your heart, everything. It was your whole world. It was hard to draw a separate line and make it really, really personal. Have you ever wanted to walk away?
Yes.
How many times?
Yeah. Yes, there definitely have been times or seasons where I just thought, you know what? Why? I don't know. I mean, and again, I didn't go into the ministry for money, but it's kind of the whole thought of, they don't pay me enough. You know, yeah. It's just like, and I'm not looking for a raise when I say that. That's not what I'm talking about. It's just like, again, life is too short. Why would I put myself through this? This is too hard. This is too hard. I am very, very blessed. I've heard guys say, I've resigned every Monday morning for the last, that's not me. I love my job. We have a great elder board, our staff, my pastoral team, but there have been seasons for sure where I'm just like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's been a good run. Maybe this is it. So why have I not? I've got people in my church probably wondering, why haven't you gone ahead and wrapped it up? but it's coming back to, okay, God hasn't released me yet. Yeah. And maybe, Paul, there have been times where I'm like, I need a soul care day. I need a few days off. Or one of the things, and again, I'm very grateful for our church, is that we have a sabbatical policy where we can have, I won't go into all the details, but extended time away, not to prepare sermons, not just to care for the nurture of the soul and the heart, and to make sure that that calling and the passion remains there.
It's one of the reasons I encourage pastors to come up with some definition of what their call is. And it's very Christianese and it's very pastoral centered to use that call word. But it meant something to me in my generation. And at least, like, I could articulate that verse. I go back to that verse. To whom much has been given, much will be required. That's not, I'm not motivated out of guilt because of what I've been given. But when we're given gifts by God, we know that grace leads us to give what we've been given away. Mm-hmm. So I can continually go back to that calling when I have the same feelings that Bob described. And that sustained me. And so I encourage the pastors that I'm working with to have that. At the same time, there's nothing wrong if God is in it to say, you did have a good run and it's okay for you. I have lots of friends that had a wonderful run in ministry and they moved into different arenas, some of it nonprofit, some of it for profit, but that's a personal calling, but it's also based on what they thought their original call was.
I think I've seen this trend among pastors today that we get a little bit, our imagination starts to go and we start picturing our life. What would it be like if I didn't have to carry this weight? And Bob and Paul are both nodding right now. So I think they understand exactly. There's just something about, I wonder if I would be a different person. I wonder if I would have a different set of, I wonder if I would laugh more. I wonder if life would just be a little bit lighter if I didn't carry the weight of all of these different, not that it's all crisis and tragedy, but we do tend to be somewhat crisis centered in those moments. And so for me, there definitely have been times when I have wondered, I just wonder if life would be different. You begin to picture it in your mind. And there are days when, I remember Jim Scobie years ago, we all kind of have a pastor mentor of some kind. And Jim would always say, Grant, and he was a beautiful Scottish guy. He's just like, Grant, don't think about those things on a Monday. Like just don't think about them on Monday. At least keep it till Tuesday, And Jim had been in the ministry for years, actually just passed away this past year during the COVID pandemic. And I often think of what life would be like as a young pastor, got to spend time with Jim, and I would ask these kinds of questions. And he would talk about, a long push in the direction of obedience over and over and over, just coming back to the same calling. But are there days when it would be easier to just say, I think I'm going to go do something different? Absolutely. I think anyone who says any different is probably lying.
So a staggering number of pastors have left ministry over the past year. What do you think is the reason for that? And it sounds like more and more, right? The statistics aren't good for ministry right now.
Boy, that's a great question, Laurel.
I'm just waiting for a great answer,
yeah,
Paul.
Well, you kind of torpedoed one of my statements for your earlier question. That is, at least in this era, meaning the last 20 years, I haven't been as concerned about people, quote unquote, choosing vocational ministry for the sake of the perks and being up front and whatever they think is going to be the cool part of it. This generation, the younger generation of pastors, I think is coming in with much better eyes open to the difficulties. I think our generation has been more honest about those things so that they're seeing that. So, yeah, I mean, I, again, I just have to go back to the call. Don't do this unless there's a call. And it doesn't mean that somebody who has unplugged from their church in the last 6 months doesn't have a call. I would have to sit down with them and really listen to hear what was specific to what was going on with them. But I will say that just over my lifetime, I'm 67 now, and I've lived from the days when pastors were revered and honored, and they were integral parts of the communities they lived in. And here we sit, and now we're at the opposite end. We're at the lowest of respect. And so for me, it's more a function of just saying, you got to sit down with an individual and just make sure you don't make that decision in a vacuum. Don't make it on Monday. Wait till Tuesday.
I think there was a season when, I mean, a quote-unquote high-profile celebrity pastor, that didn't even exist 20 years ago, at least not the way we see it today. And now to see the heartbreak and the mistrust of, because you are, you're judged according to the latest headline that came across with, you know, so-and-so pastor fell. And ministering in a church, actually pastoring a church where we had a moral failure and a pretty high-profile moral failure with my predecessor, that was heartbreaking. And it took years to rebuild trust with people. I mean, there was a time people heard the initials of our church, CTK, and it wasn't like they got this glowing look on their face and just like, oh, wow, we were known for a downfall. And that was heartbreaking. But at the same time, as I watch people and I've spent a lot of time in this last year talking with guys that I've worked with, peers, and I just don't think I've got anything left in the tank to get through this next wave. I don't think I've got another rebuild in me, because I think we're all facing a different level. There's a different kind of rebuild that's coming. I don't think everybody's going to be flooding back through the doors. Now we've got digital, we've got fidgetal, we've got in-person, we've got outside of person. I mean, there's just so many different challenges that are coming. So what I do know is this, the promises of God, like Jesus said, I'm going to build it. I will build my church. I keep coming back to that over and over again. And I think sometimes there's a deconstruction before there's a different form of construction that's coming. And so I'm challenged because I have lost so many friends in this last year. Not that I've lost them as friends, but they're no longer pastoring. It's like, I just want to do something different. I can't keep moving. And so I think it's going to be a challenge for the church moving forward to figure out who can reinvent, what's it going to look like. And my hope and prayer is that it becomes healthier, that we're not allowed to live. Unfortunately, everyone that's fell, what's been exposed is they had a private life that they didn't let anybody into. And when it all crumbled around them, that was the thing that was left exposed. And then the world begins to make judgments about who Jesus is. Because if the shepherds can't have a deep abiding conversation and an existence with Jesus, then how in the world are the rest of the people, quote unquote, supposed to get it by?
So I mean, to challenge that a little bit, I don't think it is always definitely a moral failure or something. I mean, especially this year and past year and a half, I mean, Jesus warns over and over again to watch your words, watch your tongue. They matter, right? And I think people lost it. And, you know, pastors listen. That's what you do. And I think you ended up having to listen to a lot of wounded people that didn't realize the power of their words. And for many pastors, when that was again and again and again and again, especially when you're trying to serve your community and your church to the best of your ability with no rule books, I mean, it was the most confusing season of all. I think a lot of them didn't know where to turn and literally walked away incredibly wounded and in a pool of pain that I really don't know was a result of their own misdoing, but maybe more so the people that were placed around them that were supposed to be supporting them and encouraging them. And so I want to bounce off of that and talk about pastors praying for pastors, because you guys have all contributed to a sense of camaraderie versus competition that you've worked hard in this community to cultivate among pastors. And do you call it pastors praying for pastors? Is that?
Yep.
Yeah. So just talk more about that, because I think it's incredibly unique. It's so encouraging. And I think it's something that our community really needs to hear about.
I'll jump back a little bit because I hear your point. I think people know about the high profile falls, but there's also that slow erosion that happens in a person or a pastor's soul over time.
this is how we fight at home. We go, I say something, Grant as his defense. We go back and forth. Welcome to our world.
There we go. But that slow erosion is one of the reasons why we started Pastors Praying for Pastors, because we wanted a safe place. And the rules are pretty simple. So you show up. The rule is you don't get to pray for your own church. You got to pray for somebody else's. You have to be real, and nobody's going to ask you for anything. We're not going to add anything to your job description. You don't have walk away with a to-do list. You're not being conscripted. And we have held to that over the years when there's been a lot of other pressure to, no, let's add this to it. Let's add this to it. So it really is, it's a protection when it comes to the brotherhood and the sisterhood, because we have lady pastors who join us on a regular basis as well, to be able to say, I'm going to care about you so that the little things don't get. I think of the last one we just did, right? There were pastors lamenting the personal wounds of people. Mm. Like they were saying out loud, God, when that person came into my office and they questioned my faith because of whether I decided to close a door, open a door, stay in the game, mask, not mask. And there were tears in the room. There were audible cries and tears from people who were just lamenting the fact that, God, I didn't even think that that would be something I would have to experience. So Pastors Praying for Pastors became a way of doing that. But I'd love to hear your guys' perspectives on it.
I just want to piggyback on one of the things that Grant had said is, over the years, we've had outside organizations come in and say, or contact us and say, hey, could we understand there's a group of pastors that get together once a quarter or so. We would like to, and then whatever it is. And sometimes it's good. We would like to offer them all and bring in this gift or whatever. And it's just always been absolutely not. This is about praying. And it's not that we don't believe in these organizations or that we wouldn't promote them in our own settings, but this is about just coming together to pray. We've had people, pastors from within, say, why don't we all get together and do this community? That's a great thing, but that's not what this group is about. Mm. And what I have appreciated is from all of us is that we stick to this. We're going to do one thing. We're going to do one thing, and that is we're going to pray. And it has been beautiful over the years. The community that has developed, the culture of trust, what'd you say? Not competition, but
camaraderie.
Camaraderie.
Yeah.
And to do that, it's been an incredible thing. Wonderful times of worship and prayer and unity. How good and pleasant it is when we dwell together in unity.
Yeah. I think another thing as well is when new pastors come into the area, they'll actually say, I've never experienced this before. And it's kind of, it's sad to me, but I think it's one of those unspoken things in church world that there actually is a fairly high level of competition. And we made a decision that we were just not going to do that. We weren't going to cave into that. We actually thought camaraderie was a better way of doing it than competition. And Paul, so you've experienced, like, you go back years in this whole thing, right? From the, what did it used to be called?
The Bellingham Evangelical Ministerial Association.
I want to go to that.
Yeah. And that was more the traditional in the 80s when I came to town. But I always mark the early 90s. A group of us were invited to go up to Cedar Springs for 3 days of prayer. And it was just a terrific time that I think set a spiritual dynamic that continues today. Mm-hmm. Because you can't program this. What those guys just described is what we've kept out in terms of programming, but you can't program the heart of that.
Yeah.
You have to find like-minded men and women, and that's what we've been fortunate to have. And if you come into town to a church as a new pastor and your desire is to build your own little kingdom, you'll figure out pretty soon that the Holy Spirit has done something very special. Mm. And I think that's what we get to hear is like, man, I was going to be happy that I got somebody from a church X, but now I realize the heart of Grant and Bob and everybody, and it's just like, I want to join that.
Yeah, it's truly not just a gift for pastors. It is a gift to the whole community because it's a domino effect, for sure. So do you ever feel like you can ditch the title, or are you forever the pastor in the room?
Paul always has to be the pastor. It just goes with his, it's his email address. I mean, seriously.
Well, I told Bob Stone, I referenced earlier, because again, coming from a business career, I fought him for 3 years upon the invitation he gave me to come to the church at Hillcrest. And it was because I felt I was a more effective evangelist in a secular business place than I would be coming into the subculture of a hothouse, I call it, of Christianity. Mm. And so I explained that to him, and I said, I do not want to be pastorized. That was my phrase again for becoming the worst caricature of something I did not want to be. So I've resisted that from the very beginning, and I hope that as I sit here today, I've got an identity that isn't tied to what I have done and enjoyed doing for 37 years. And I have a wife that keeps me really humble. So God bless you, Laurel. Keep up the good work. The fruit is showing.
In this is a tough job. It's a tough but job. Somebody's got to do
job.
It.
Let's be honest.
But anyway, just all the time that you've put into our community as pastors, what are some of the greatest challenges and the greatest blessings? And we may have kind of touched on those, but I think we're wrapping it up. This is the last question. And I think it's really good to, I want people to hear this isn't easy, but it's worth it. I think that's why all of you are still here now.
You know what? I'll tell you one of the great blessings of being in a ministry in a local congregation and in an area for a lot of years is the relational, spiritual, generational, if I can use those words, impact. So I have, when I came here in 1987, I came as a youth pastor. So I have people who I got to minister to when they were in high school in the 80s. And I got to do their wedding, and I got to dedicate their children. I got to baptize their children. Recently, I just did the wedding of a young man whose dad was in my youth group. Get to bury their parents. When I say get to, I don't mean like I look forward to that, but to be able to be a part of people's lives in significant moments, there's a level of relational connection there that's a blessing for me. Mm. And I hope it's a blessing for them, but it's a blessing for me to be able to look back over decades of life together. I had a lady in my church this week. She sent me an email about a sermon that I preached in 1998.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't even remember that, you know. And so, what a blessing.
Yeah.
But she was saying it was a blessing to her, still remains that way. So I think the longevity, there's some things. I just heard, because Rick Warren is starting his succession plan, he made a comment. He didn't cite the source, so I don't know, but he said that pastors today, on average, stay at a church 3.6 years. Now, where he got that, I don't know. But there are some things that cannot happen in 3.6 years.
Yeah. I think there's two levels. You know, when this goes back to the question about how would you describe what pastors do, I always say there's the stuff that has to be done. It's the institutional things. Another Sunday's going to come. We need to prepare the teachings. We need to do the stuff of the church. And then there's this whole other level that is unpredictable, that are the phone calls, the deaths, the births, all of the things that are involved when you have X amount of people. And so when you talk about what are the fulfilling things, there's fulfilling things on both of those levels. What Bob described was the pastoral shepherd's heart. I just buried a wonderful lady, and it was the first time I thought I've been involved with four generations from her daughter, her son, and grandson. You know, all... Well, that's that pastoral side. And then there's the institutional side, and that's when I watch all the other churches around here that hold Jesus at the center. I've said this to the pastors praying for pastors, that a good shepherd is one who is an heir of the past of that particular church. We didn't create that. We're standing on the shoulders of those who came before us. But we are stewards of the present. And so we take on that responsibility. That's some of the weight. But we also get to be architects for the future. And all three of those things, when I think now where I sit, looking back at the two churches that I've served, the interims I've done, and then the relationships with the broader community, I'm thrilled that Bob and his church have salt on the street, that they are constantly looking for ways to move into the culture. CTK the same way, and the influence that Grant has with the police and the medical, And those are the things that we've also rejoiced in. We don't just celebrate what's happened in our own institutional churches. But we've all had the vision to get out of the walls and make an influence, and we are. And
I think it's the little trophies. I've got a letter sitting on my desk. I don't even know who this person is, but he wrote a letter. I think the last line goes something along the lines, I just need you to know that one lost soul heard. And you hold on to those things when you see life transformation. I met a young lady named Carrie who's getting baptized this weekend at CTK. And she shared, she was a year ago, I had no interest in God, not connected whatsoever. Amen. But then I started checking some stuff out because friends started inviting me into, and I gave my heart to Jesus. And now I'm being baptized. I want to follow in obedience. And I have those moments. You go, that's what makes it all worth it for me to be there in those moments when you see someone make a transforming life decision and you get to know them, you get to speak to them, you get to share their journey, you get to call them out at times. To me, that those are the joyful pieces. And then to see the families grow over time. I was a youth pastor too. Paul, you've got your history back there. Bob, you were a youth pastor before you became a senior pastor. When you see the kids who used to be in your middle school group, now with their kids in your children's ministry, and they're growing, and you see them as successful members of our community, they're business people. And they, you know, sometimes they'll call and say, hey, would you come and pray with me in my office? I'm opening a new branch or something. Would you come and could we do that together? Those are joys. They're celebrations. And when you just see people making godly decisions and moving in the right direction, I don't think there's anything better than that.
Well, and I know just even for myself, we get to see the story behind the person. I think so many people just pass, you know, as they're walking in and out. And for us as pastors, we get to hear some of those transformations and how grand they are and how incredible Jesus is when he's allowed into our lives to make those differences. So those stories are so uplifting and faith building. And I think it's important. We probably need to share them more from a leadership perspective, right? Yeah. Well, from the bottom of my heart, and I'm pretty sure I can speak for those listening as well, thank you for the investment that you have made in our community. Lost and broken people, and that pretty much describes all of us at some point, have found hope because you cared about our souls. Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to just say, in fact, I'm thinking, so we've got about 26 years here in Whatcom County, 30 years plus. Bob, how many years have you got invested in Whatcom County?
Help me with the math, since 87. So, I don't know, figure that out.
34.
30, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. 34. Paul, how many you
37.
Got? 37. So we're almost at 100 years investment. If you add all the pieces up, and there was things before that as well. So I want to echo Laurel and just say thank you to the two of you. You both have had incredible impact in so many people's lives, including ours. I mean, at different times, we just so appreciate everything that you've put into it. And so as shepherds, thank you. We so appreciate the work that you do, even the stuff that goes unseen. I'm hoping that this podcast will help people see some of the stuff behind what we actually do, that they'll have an even greater level of appreciation. And Paul, I know you're quote unquote retired, which is whatever. That doesn't even happen. You lasted a couple of weeks and you went down to Mercer Island and you were pastoring down there in COVID season of all things. So for the faithfulness, for your help, for your love, and for your investment in this community, we are deeply, deeply appreciative. God bless you both. I love you.
If you're enjoying the content of the podcast, please hit the subscribe button or leave us a review. We would absolutely love to hear from you. For more info about CTK or message content from Pastor Grant, please visit ctk.church. We sincerely hope you join us again next time as we continue the conversation with Grant and Laurel Fishbook.